Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. This is episode 133 for September 2019. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club. This is a show where we cover the news from around the world with people from around the world, and we try to get different perspectives on what's been happening, either in our local regions or, you know, the things that we've heard about, which are more international. My name is Patrick Beja, and this is a regular show, but we also do specials every once in a while. Usually every month we try to, and the last special, if you haven't heard it, if you haven't listened, please go back and check that out. It's a special about China and Africa. We had Eric and Lena on the show, who were wonderful hosts and who gave me a lot to think about and a lot of outside perspective, outside of my world, my bubble, however you want to call it, the Western world, which Eric had some issues with as a term, but that's exactly what I hope the show does well. So if you're curious about what China is doing in Africa, what African nations and people think about all of this, and probably things that you don't really imagine they would think about in those ways, go check it out. It's episode 132, and I think it was pretty cool. This is episode 133, however, and we're going to be talking about what's been happening in the world. And to help me do that, because I am but one lone person in Finland and also, you know, somewhat French, I have two people who are going to help me in that task on the American, I should say, Usen side. Really. But on the American side, Wendy, how's it going, Wendy?
Good, good. Hi, everybody.
What is up with you these days?
Oh, I'm just in America.
That sums it up.
The American thing, you know, we buy lots of stuff and I don't know. Are sad. I don't know. We're just
buying lots of stuff and being sad. I think that summarizes. The irony, I think many people are sad, but the irony is that no matter where you stand, on which side you stand of any big issue in the US, I think most people are sad anyway. Whether you're getting your way or not, everyone's just sad. And yeah. And buying stuff, which, you know, sometimes makes you feel a little bit less sad.
Yeah, for a minute. And then we got to work extra hard to pay for it. So it's a cycle.
Damn it. Well, I mean, I hope waking up early to do the show isn't making you sad. Oh, you didn't wake up early.
No, it's good. I just, you know, kids out the door. I'm ready for this. Let's do it.
All right. The third chair on this episode is Dan from Mexico. So that's why I was saying Usen. And actually, because American, you're also in America, but in Central America. How is it going, Dan? Apparently, it's not.
Actually, we're part of North America, remember? That's right. Yeah. And we're actually part of North America together with the United States and Canada. And I am ready to have this discussion where perhaps I will talk about, I don't know, country, freedom of speech, and perhaps immigration.
Ooh, exciting. Topics that are common in these parts as well. Cool. Well, thank you, first of all, for correcting me that I guess there is no Central America, is there? Like, it's this little strand of land that connects South and North. That's part of Mexico, isn't it? Am I displaying my...
It actually is, because, for example, I work in advertisement and I deliver, advertisement to different parts in the continent. So we actually have a part that it's called Central America, Belize, Guatemala, the area that is right at the center. But as you mentioned...
Oops, your connection isn't...
As what you have at the south or perhaps at the northern.
Right.
Okay, can you give me...
Oh. I'm going to give you 1 second to try and find a better connection. No
and
worries.
And we'll get back to you, okay?
No problem, no problem. All right. Right. So, yeah, obviously, I mean, I'm not Google mapping all of this, but Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama, Cuba, the Dominican Republic, etc., etc. And Puerto Rico, which some might know, is actually part of the United States.
It is, yeah.
Uh-huh. All right, well, that's Central America, but we're not going to be talking about that since no one on this show is from there.
Testing, testing.
Oh, that sounds better.
Okay, excellent. Sorry about that.
No problem. I was just recounting all the wonderful countries that are part of Central America and saying that that's not what we're going to be talking about since U.S., Mexico, and France/Finland. So yeah, everything going well in Mexico?
Yes, and for example, this is the month of the country. For some of the people in the United States or in Europe, they think that the Cinco de Mayo is the main celebration that we have in Mexico, but it is not. We have the Cry of Dolores, which is the moment that we celebrate where the revolution for independence began, and that was this month. So we actually were celebrating the national heroes, and actually on Saturday, perhaps have you heard that in the rest of the world, they were celebrating some of the same heroes. We have also Batman Day. I don't know if they can consider Batman a local hero in here, but well, we have the Bat Signal in Mexico City.
Well, it seems like a wonderful thing to be celebrating. Although some might see it as, you know, the tragic twisted character that was formed by the horror of losing their parents in a corrupt and destroyed city that is an allegory for the U.S. Some American cities like New York. So I don't know if that's going to bring a smile back to our faces, Dan. Thank you.
Oops, sorry about that.
But we'll try. All right, let's start with, I'm going to be talking about France, I suppose, but I think that fits for every country or most countries around the world that that's the impression I get. It's, of course, the climate change issue, which is getting much more visibility than it has at any point in the past. We've had, of course, the March for the Fridays for the Future, I believe, on, last Friday. And those were, in the case of France, the continuing demonstrations by the Yellow Jackets have sort of melded into, I'm choosing my words somewhat carefully, melded into the climate protests. And what was happening to the Yellow Jackets, the Yellow Vests in the country, and those protests, which have a lot of issues with the police forces and the protesters themselves, that doesn't seem to be getting resolved with accusations of police violence and, I guess, some accusations as well of violence on the side of the protesters. And that's always that back and forth, you know. You always hear, oh, but we're doing this because they are dangerous, and they say that they weren't dangerous and that the police is using excessive force. I have to say, watching the news and the Twitter feeds, the impression is that there was excessive force. But of course, it's always difficult to know what actually happened for sure. But the excessive force doesn't seem to be stopping, which is a concern. And the reason I'm getting into this is somewhat linked to the Yellow Vest, but it did, as I was saying, bleed into the concerns and the protests about the climate, which the Yellow Vests kind of associated themselves with that movement. And so it brought the concerns that were existing already there to that. And I don't know that we can easily divide the two. But I think that what I'm seeing and what I'm feeling is that the concern for climate change and the dangers that the planet is facing are becoming way, way more visible. It feels like there has been a kind of an inflection point, partly driven by Greta Thunberg, who is being in the country, you know, described as both an incredibly courageous young lady by the proponents and in a very untactful manner, I think, by some of the opponents, as, you know, an enraged person. I'll leave it at that. And they use all manners of derogatory descriptions, which I think are not very appropriate. Some of those people are trying to say various forms of she's an idealist, but reality is different, which I think I understand a little bit more. But certainly driven by her and in part by her, maybe not entirely, I think climate change has become probably one of the main concerns in the country. And I feel that that will become not only one of the main issues in the next presidential election, but possibly the Green Party / parties will gain a lot of traction in the next election. That might be my personal feeling and my bias, because I have felt a shift around me as well, but it seems like things have boiled to a point where the urgency is being felt by everyone. I think that is a good way of summarizing it. So that would be, I think, the main things that happened in the past few weeks in France. I'm curious, Wendy, of course, there's the summit in the U.S. at the moment. Does that feeling ring, you know, echo in the U.S., or do you have other fish to fry?
Oh, we have so many fish to fry. you know, I think it definitely echoes. I mean, you know, kids in all over the country joined in on that Friday, and, you know, lots of parents, lots of teachers, lots of, you know, I think it's definitely happening in that grassroots sort of way. And just my, you know, I hang out with teenagers a little bit. My kids are teenagers. I've had lots of conversations with young people about just the way they see the world differently. And it is very different from what I would say was even 5-6 years ago when I lived here last. And of course, I was in Sweden in the meantime. And so, you know, I know what was happening there in the last 5 years, and it was definitely growing there. That was really obvious. They always have had it in their blood, right? Mm. Like, let's do the right thing, and let's, you know, recycling was the most amazing experience of my life there. 99% of waste is recycled. I mean,
we recycle so much in Finland. It's crazy,
yeah. Right? And you like fuel your cities with the burning of the plastic.
Trash and yeah.
A massive, yeah, it's amazing, yeah. Right? And so Greta Thunberg, I'm going to say it the right way. Uh-huh. She is like, just like, it makes so much sense. It's coming from Sweden to me, because that's who they are. And so I saw that even grow there. Like, a lot of my clients who are still in Sweden, they will talk about how they have, you know, started cutting out plane rides and they're taking the train. And so I'm watching it in real time there. Here, I think we're always way slower because of my initial joke of how we like to buy things and be sad. I mean, we're such a consumer-based society, and so much of what we consume is terrible for the planet, because we order something on Amazon and it's at my house 2 days later. I mean, there is a Amazon delivery truck or one of the companies delivering something on my street daily. And so it is a very big part of what we're doing, which is why we're a big problem, because there's so many of us. Our sort of culture is built around this. So yes, am I seeing shifts? Yes. Am I talking to younger people who absolutely see this as massively important? Absolutely. There is also a very common feeling, and this could just be where I am, that boomers are the worst thing ever. Mm. And the joke among 14-year-olds is to call someone a boomer if they're terrible.
You know, that's certainly a part of the feelings I get here. And I think that's I really think that's common everywhere. The feeling that exactly embodied by Greta Thunberg, as you said, the feeling nice. That we, I guess I'm almost 50 now, holy crap, we are screwing it for them. We're not going to be there in 50 years when think, well, maybe I'll be on, you know, the last, my last legs. But we're not going to be there. It's not for us that it's a real problem. It's for them. And that feeling, I think, is something new that we didn't really have even 2 or 3 years ago. And that resonates a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, can I just say something quickly about Greta? She had an awesome tweet and I was looking for it and I can't find it, but essentially it was, you know, people start to attack how she looks and how she acts. Welcome to being a woman, friend. You know, how you act, you're supposed to be nice, you're supposed to be happy, you're not allowed to be angry, you know, and all of those things are coming at her as she has obviously gained notoriety and is incredible. I mean, we have a teenager who got half the world to protest on a Friday. A year and a half ago, she sat alone with a sign outside her school. Like, that's, it's astounding. And she then talked about how she has Asperger's syndrome or she's on the spectrum and that it just literally doesn't, she doesn't care. Like, it doesn't hit her. Mm. And which might be one of the reasons she can be this powerful. And it's, you know, her discouragement's probably in the effort she's making or that people aren't responding, not about her personally doing this, because it kind of runs off her back. And she said this great thing in her, as she was talking about this in her tweet, she said, you know, this is, it's clear where they are when they have to revert to talking about how I look and calling me names. Mm. And so the president of the United States, he who shall not be named, is takes his time, which he wastes his time constantly. We all know that. But he takes his time to mock a 16-year-old child. Like, where are we at? What is terrifying to the adults who are shamed by this? And for, you know, the reality is it's a world that the generation before created. And you have young kids saying it's not okay. And so she's calling out sort of either the shame or the reaction to that shame of, you know, mocking and then deriding her. And anyway, it's just evidence that she's nailing it, you know? And I think, you know, she knows that, and which makes her even more dangerous, which is great.
I will say, just to take the other side of it, I understand that people are responding to her and it's kind of a catch 22. If you say something, if you don't say anything, that then she's unopposed. And if you say something, then, you know, you're attacking a 16-year-old. But at the same time, there are different things that are okay to say, especially about a 16-year-old. And I think that's where the line should be drawn. Like, even if you mock adults or whatever in a certain way, which is still not okay, but less not okay than about a kid. Like, when it's a kid, you probably have to be a little bit more careful or tactful in what you say, which we know is not your president's strong suit, but
still. No, it's definitely not. And I think too, a way to think about it is, okay, if you're going to attack her or what she's doing or what she's about, then do it with some substance. And maybe there are folks out there doing that. I haven't read that. Like, have a policy discussion, talk about that it's a terrible thing to have young people have ideas. I mean, let's get to what the meat of it is. Not this is Trump's tweet. She seems like a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. So nice to see. So he is, because she's angry, she's upset, she's calling everyone out. She is not behaving the way ladies are supposed to behave in his world. And so he's just sarcastically mocking her. I mean, that is, it's the lowest form of, it's just gross.
Dan, How's it going? How is climate going in Mexico?
Yeah, well, it also resonated in here because we also had some some marches in the city center in Mexico City, obviously supporting this movement. And for example, it was kind of funny seeing some of the people, let's call it in the other side of the fence, that wanted to discredit the general message, because they were saying things like, well, we have perhaps children that are in a more complicated situation than the children, or in this case, teenager, that it's accusing us or telling us a message that we actually need to hear. But we have to worry more about the things that we have in here, the economical situation. However, one of the marches that we had in here, we're focusing this general message, this needed message that we all must be listening, and trying to focus it in the regional problems that we have here in Mexico. One in particular is that part of our brand new president, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, here in Mexico, he's about to have one year as president in here. But one of his main proposals is to build a refinery at one of the southern states. At the south, we have the states that are in more complicated situation, the poorest states in the entire country. So for one side, you can understand why he want to bring more economical benefits, more development in that area. However, the main problem here is that it feels more like something that is not helping, in this case, the climate change that we are all facing. Mm. And also because he's focusing on the, something that was, let's say, the proper movement to do, but like 3 decades ago, we shouldn't be focusing on extracting oil, especially the kind of oil that you can get here in Mexico, which is like the heaviest, the one that you have to process a lot. So we actually have to sell it to the United States, and then we have to buy it back as gas. So that's not economical. That doesn't make any sense in the economical point of view. And you also have like 2 or 3 refineries that are in states nearby. So it's more like he wants to help this particular state that I agree that needs help, economical help, but it's his home state. So you understand why he wants to do that, but it's more like a political movement. So he's not taking care of what is something that can be sustainable for the future. So as I was mentioning before, some of the protests that were taking place with this march, some of the signs that they were carrying were like, I don't want a president who is anti-science. I don't want a president who doesn't believe that we are facing these problems right now. And they were actually directed to Mexico. I want to mention is not all the people in the march, perhaps were just like 2 or 3 signs. I don't want to say that everybody's against the president. Actually, he has one of the highest approval rates in recent times. But that actually happened. So some people were complaining about this specific topic.
I think that's, well, there are 2 things in what you said. First, the fact that, you know, she's a kid and they're kids and they don't really know what they're talking about, kind of. I think that's kind of a given. They obviously, they're teenagers and they don't necessarily understand the complexities of all of the systems that work together to create society. But that's obvious, but it doesn't really matter, right? The problems that they're shoving in our faces aren't less real because the way they form are complex. And I think, as you both mentioned, if we have to talk about it, it's important to talk about how maybe we, you know, if we challenge them about the way we do the solutions, that's valid. But yeah, anyway, so that's something I wanted to mention. And yeah, the other thing is, in general, I feel that the people who are for action are for action anyway, but the people who used to be against action seem to be moving towards in the other direction. Maybe they're not there yet, but that's something I feel. And I think what you're describing, Dan, makes me feel maybe that's actually the case indeed. So,
well, I would throw something out really quick. Just economically, it's easy for a country like Sweden or Finland, and should be easy for the United States, that has the resources or the long history of economic sort of the benefit to be like, oh, you know what we ought to do is be more careful, or, you know, maybe risk profit so that we can make the air cleaner or various things. So that's a luxury, I think. And I think other countries that are struggling with some various things that's hard to have that top of your agenda when,
right,
you know, there needs to be these other things. So in some ways it's a bit unfair. And I will just point at my country as the worst culprits of this, because we in theory should be, we should be the forerunners. We are the forerunners in polluting. We should definitely be the forerunners in fixing.
And I think, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I think that that tends to be this double down you're sort of describing of, you know, it's money, it's politics, it's all oil. I mean, it's all of the fundamental things underlying it that are getting, that would have to be altered or removed or changed in some way, that maybe less profit is made initially, you know, while the science emerges. You know, and there's obviously money to still be made, but if that's the bottom line is not clean air, clean water, cooling of the planet. The bottom line tends to be financial, and that's why there has to be a political fight. That's why sometimes we have to have a out of the mouth of babes teach us something and force us to stare at something, because for them, they have yet to be wrapped up in the world where it's about financial gain or loss. And so they're teachers in that way.
I think that aspect about financial gain or loss is really important, and the political action linked to it. And in the US, you seem to be so disillusioned with political action, which, by the way, I think is an active work that some politicians did, teaching the American public that politics is not a trap, but is a marsh that is inefficient. Right. Which gets people to work against their self-interest in a way that is infuriating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the big, you know, we can recycle all day long. It's obviously not going to be as efficient as companies, which are the backbone of our economy, taking action. And if a company is suffering, maybe that's not the one we should be focusing on, but there are many companies that are that have very heavy profits, that could, the consequence of making things in a more sustainable way wouldn't be that the company goes under. It's not like a small business that in downtown Detroit. It's a big company that has billions of profits a year, if not a quarter or a month or a week. And making things in a more sustainable way would reduce those profits, which in turn makes less profits for shareholders, and we don't want to, you know, completely upend the system. But it seems like it's needed now, and they're not going to do it on their own. You're never going to say, "Oh, I could have $1,000. You know what? I'll just give you 300, and I'll take 700. Whatever, it's fine. I don't care."
Right.
It's so. This is where the political, not just will, but the political, the role of the political system is involved. And that's what is needed now. So anyway, I don't know where I was going with this. Dan, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, perhaps just a brief comment, but this kind of discussion that we're having is something that, as you mentioned, it's more like in the political aspect. And for example, in countries that are more evolved, we can say that, it's easier to criticize other countries for not taking the measures that are needed. We can criticize India for the pollution that they are creating, but, and they can defend themselves because they're saying we have to get to a point where we are similar to the economical situation that you have in your country, and then we can do something about it. But that will take about, I don't know, 30, 40 years, 20 years, I don't know. It will take longer than it is needed. So the voices that we're listening right now, they might come from somebody who is underage. They might come from somebody who perhaps has a mental disability. It doesn't matter. The truth must be spoken, and the truth must be listened to, even though it can make us uncomfortable. And we have to actually regulate and work in the politics so we can understand and we can have at least some guidelines of what we can do to improve the situation right now, and also for the future of our countries and of the world.
Right. Can I throw one thing in there too? Thank you for that, Dan. I think there's another thing happening, and this is to bring a little hope to the conversation. So I have a brother who's pretty conservative guy and pretty like climate change is a hoax kind of dude. And most recently I interacted with him, and he said, almost in this sort of confessionary tone, he said, You know what? I think the biggest threat facing all of us is climate change. And you could have knocked me over with a feather. I thought he'd been possessed. I could not figure out what was happening. And I said, wait a minute, what? And what it was is he lives in Arizona. He's lived there 30 years. It is a desert. It's hot. It's the surface of the sun. I mean, summer average temps are 120, 115, which is what, 50 something degrees?
Jeez.
Celsius. It's hot, hot, hot. They don't go outside. Stuff melts. I mean, it's terrible. And he's lived there 30 years. He knows that's his weather. He's used to it. But in the last 5-10 years, they've had these storms, and I'm not going to remember the name, but they have them in various countries in the Middle East where obviously there's a lot of sand, and these storms rise up, and it's the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. He showed us a video that he took, and you watch it roll in like there's storm clouds, but it's dust and dirt or sand. And just blankets the city of Phoenix, which is a lot of people. And if you're on the freeway, you have to stop your car and wait until it passes like a storm. And then you're digging out of sand. This is new. So he has lived there his whole life, most of his whole life. And then this new phenomenon is hitting him. And he can't deny the reality that in the last 5 years, something has massively changed in his world. So and I hate that. I hate that it takes us, but this is a human response, which is, I don't have to believe anything while I still am comfortable. And I think that's the reality for certain, you know, island nations and those who are going to be affected first. They don't have any luxury to be comfortable for too long. But and I even noticed this here, you know, we had a really cold winter, this polar vortex thing you guys maybe have heard of, where this Canadian air blows down through the center of the United States, and it was this is where Celsius and Fahrenheit meet. It was minus 40.
Jeez.
And you could go outside, you can get a pair of jeans wet, go outside, and in less than a minute, they will freeze. You can put them in positions. It's pretty funny. And you can throw boiling water in the air and it will instantly evaporate. I mean, there's a lot of fun science, but it is freezing. And that's supposed to happen every once in a while. That has happened a couple years in a row. Mm. And people are more and more nervous because they're having weather events they've never had before, or, you know, hasn't happened in 100 years. So I think that your own experience of your weather has an impact.
I think, you know, that echoes something that Tony said last month, who, as frequent listeners of the show might remember, Tony is a pretty conservative person. And talking about climate change, he kind of echoed the feelings of your brother. He was saying, you know, at this point, I'm thinking it doesn't really matter if it's man-made or not. It's here, so we probably have to do something about it. And that's what I think I was getting at when I was saying, as Dan was delivering his beautiful speech a few minutes ago, I was thinking, yes, absolutely. But at the same time, oh, what a wonderful bunch of leftists we are here in our bubble agreeing with each other. But I genuinely think that the people who, that's what I was saying earlier, who were on the other side of this issue are not here yet with us, but are moving towards our side of it because they're realizing, they're seeing the effects more and more. And so I guess the conclusion, as I was saying in the beginning, is that the urgency is being felt at last. All right, that's it for climate change. Wendy, why don't you tell us what else has been happening in the United States of America?
Well, we might have to take "United" out of the title. I feel like
oops,
things that are not very uniting. Okay. So just
why hasn't there been a movie called "The Divided States of America"? There has to be, well, or a book at least. I'm going to Google that.
I am sure there is many books actually. You know, we're a young democracy. I think sometimes we forget that. I think we think
there's a lot of divided states of America. Okay,
never mind. Yeah, there are a lot of divided states. You know, we're a young democracy. I think we forget that, and we have taken a lot of things for granted in our adolescence as a country, because that's what you do as an adolescent. And I think we're hitting a bump in the road that, you know, we've hit before. So yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, who's the House Speaker in Congress, said that we're ready to start the actions necessary to, you know, investigate the president and impeach him. And so you guys have probably heard the word impeach a million different times. It's like strange. Like, what does that mean? A peach? You don't eat a peach? It doesn't. Yeah. And ultimately what it means is it's, and something to know, it's only happened three other times in history.
The impeachment or the inquiry?
The impeachment inquiry. The impeachment.
Okay. And so that it actually results into an actual impeachment.
Yes. And what happened in the other two times, it was Andrew Jackson was the first, and then it was Bill Clinton, and then, Nixon was second, Richard Nixon, and then Bill Clinton was the last one. And
just to clarify, Clinton wasn't impeached, so you're talking about the inquiry.
Let me explain what happened. So two were impeached. Andrew Johnson, I said Jackson, I apologize. It should have been Jackson. But anyway, Andrew Johnson, he was impeached. And let's see, that was 1868, so a long time ago. And then Bill Clinton was impeached in 1998, but both were ultimately acquitted. And then they completed their terms in office. So from the outside, it may look like, they just did an inquiry and they stayed. So obviously he wasn't impeached, but both of them were able to finish their term in office. So to have someone impeached and then out, that's never happened except with Nixon. He resigned. That was his choice. I don't know what would have happened if he had tried to stay or tried to be acquitted or whatever. But so this is not something we've done a lot. We don't have a lot of history with this being some effective way of having a president get kicked out. We don't have a revote like the rest of the world does, you know, a vote of no confidence and then they start over. That is not our jam. We go 4 years with this the president, and then, you know, the election supposedly is going to determine, you know, that's the judgment on those 4 years. Anyway, so they're going to start this. And one thing to understand is, you know, this is the division part, is that Democrats for a long time have been very paranoid about pursuing impeachment because he's done a lot of crazy stuff. He did a lot of stuff to get elected that seemed crazy. All the things that in theory seem like impeachable offenses. Almost every conversation he has with a world leader, I mean, there's probably something in there that's strange or should not be happening. He's busted every single norm that there has ever been. And so, you know, it's jumping at the bit, like, let's get him. What can we do? And I can understand that feeling. There is this feeling of, we have a sitting president who did not win the popular vote. He has done so many things that are really tough to swallow. There's a lot of people who like the stuff he's doing and discount his behavior and, you know, his history or some of these things. And people are going to believe what they want to believe. And so Nancy Pelosi, I think, has been wise in resisting the call from her caucus and from so many people to let's impeach him, impeach him, impeach him. And these are particularly the younger members of the caucus. And, you know, they just want it done. Like, get this started. There's enough evidence here. Well,
Until now, because, of course, I've heard the calls for impeachment, wasn't the issue that one of the two chambers wouldn't vote it or would block it or not let it go through anyway, so it was pointless?
They still will. Is my prediction. And even I think Mitch McConnell this morning, he's the head of the Senate, which is the other house, the speaker of that house, he said, yeah, we're going to squash it. So that's always been known. This is how politics works here. No one gets anything done. No one works across the aisle. Like that era ended. And now it's just my team, my team, my team, which is why we're so divided, because we've become so tribal. And I go back to my point of how young we are as a democracy. We've clearly had a large division in the Civil War, right? That was back when it was the line was geographical more than anything, obviously ideological, with slavery is one of those main issues, but it was also geographical, and it was the bloodiest battle Americans have ever participated in, or war combined. You add every American death from every other war, it doesn't touch what happened in the Civil War. So we have been here before in a way, way worse way. But this is this version of sort of what I find disheartening and a little scarier is just like between neighbors, between family members, there's a lot of lines getting drawn. A lot of Thanksgiving dinners that have gotten real bad, a little awkward, right? Anyway, okay, so this division is Ben, like, and I think she's been wise in this sense. Like, if she, this is a political nightmare to jump into trying to impeach the president for something he had done prior to taking oath in office. But this is what makes this different. So the president was on a call with the president of the Ukraine, and in that phone call, supposedly, there is a whistleblower. Somebody at the Justice Department was obviously aware of what was taking place. They've blown a whistle. And we have a couple laws that are supposed to protect whistleblowers, especially at this level, so that they can speak freely. And of course, we don't know who it is, and I can't even imagine what this person is going through. But they could not sit still and take this. And what happened was the president, in theory, we don't know for sure, and this is what the impeachment will be about and the inquiry will be about, but that he pressured with sort of both monetarily and all the ways you have power as the president of America, the Ukrainian president to...
Something happening in Dan's place. Could you mute your mic? Thank you very much.
Yeah, she disagrees with me. Maybe I don't know.
Actually, she just came to tell me that. So if you can please measure the comments that you're mentioning against the president. No, sorry, sorry about that.
I was like, wow, she's into this. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, what happens is it is in supposedly in that phone call, and this is what they'll look into. He pressured the president of Ukraine with, you know, kind of like, you know, the subtleties of we're not going to fund the things we've been funding for you or help you in the ways we've been helping you unless you look into Joe Biden, who is his political...
Holy, really?
Rival, yes. Joe Biden's son has some business doings in Ukraine, and there's probably something terrible. Who knows? But to use your power to then attack your political rival, and... Here's the key. This is so like him, it's not surprising, but he's doing this after he's taken the oath of office, which all of the things that maybe we think fall under this category of, you know, he benefits from people staying at his resorts, the Secret Service, the Air Force in Scotland. I mean, the money the dude has made because of going to some of his properties and the people who have to stay there and have to pay to stay there.
Which all of these things seem like they would be incredibly legal, by the way.
But. Yes. And we have a particular clause in the Constitution that essentially is like, no one should ever benefit from being an elected leader. Obviously, that is not currently happening. So that's been the call all along, the emoluments clause. You know, let's do it. Look at him. Clearly, he's making money from his office. And so they've resisted and resisted. Well, this is one that is, this would can be considered treason, bribery. I mean, it's got all the names, right? So if this did in fact happen while sitting under oath, this is like the most obvious thing they have to go with, which is, I think, why they've made the decision to go forward. So this is huge. And I will say, as someone who is not a fan of the president, it seems obvious by my comments, I have hesitation. I'm nervous about the backlash of that. I think something I've realized recently is, you know, for all of us lefties, we got so excited when President Obama was president, like the first black president. Look, we're post-racial. Look how good we are. You know, we kind of did this. And what wasn't known then and is very clear now is that it wasn't creating a new world. It was strengthening an opposing party to him. So all that happened under those 8 years was related to whatever he says, we want the opposite. Whatever he does is terrible. If you go back to the controversies when Obama was president, there was so little. But whatever he did do was blown up to be the worst thing because there were such venomous responses to him on the flip side. And then Trump has sort of brought out, and that's not everyone, but he has brought out some segments of U.S. society that have been pretty dormant and pretty quiet, and, you know, some of our bad behavior, right? And that is has emerged and been strengthened. And so my hesitation is, we think this sounds great. Like, hey, let's do this. Let's inquire and find out the truth, because we can't have a president doing this. But the political backlash makes me nervous, I have to be honest.
I guess what's the alternative? To not do it because they're going to yell louder? But I understand. Well,
there's no choice at this point. Can't know that the president is literally threatening another country to give him dirt on arrival. I mean, it's such mob gangster behavior. It's like hard to believe.
What's the initial, it's so early, we haven't really had any feedback, although I suspect in our countries, it's probably going to be, yeah, that sounds like something you would, you know, everywhere except the US. But what's the initial first day feedback? I guess we know what it is from the left side, but from the right side, beyond McConnell, you know, the media and stuff like that, are they using rhetoric that we would expect, or what's the deal?
Well, and you guys are probably familiar with Fox News. It is his favorite channel. And most recently, maybe the last couple months or so, there's been a few people on there who are a little more outspoken about some questions they have. I mean, these are reporters. I mean, they're having to, I mean, we think of the ones who are speaking like a Tucker Carlson or whatever, they are entertainers. And their job is to rile everyone up. But there are actual reporters and journalists who, you know, are good journalists that work for Fox News. And there's a couple of them that have just started to say, ask a little more questions, or like, you know, hello, maybe. And there's one in particular, and people might argue, well, he's just a fake Fox News guy, but he's not. His name's Shepard Smith. And he had a program recently, I think it was just the other night, when it was about this this topic. And you know, everyone's blaming everyone else. And, well, it must be this, or I'm sure Obama created this at some point. I guarantee we've been blaming Obama or something, right? Like, everyone else's problem. And he said, no, the problem is you, Mr. Trump. Like, he called it. And I think that's happening a little bit more, and maybe not, you know, but there is definitely some, how many excuses do we have to make for somebody? How many times do we have to wonder, you know, whatever. And there is this impeachment process. This is one of the powers that the House of Representatives have. So the founders had to create so many checks and balances because they had a pretty good grasp on how people are. And this power is to check the president's power. The House has a job, a role. This isn't just, oh, political, let's go get him because we don't like him. They have a job. This is in what they signed, you know, rose their hands and made oaths to do, is to protect the Constitution and to represent the American people. And if the president is doing things that puts all of that in jeopardy, they have to do this. And so it's going to happen no matter what. I think it's supposed to happen. It should happen. It'll be incredibly interesting to see what goes down. But it's new. Like, this was last night.
That we all found recent. Out.
Yeah.
Dan, before I give you the talking stick for what's happening in Mexico, any reaction to, you know, maybe in the country already to that impeachment inquiry announcement, or is it too early?
Well, the thing about the impeachment is that I have been hearing similar words from the very beginning, at the moment that Trump took power. So for me, it's like it will be easier just for him to finish his period and actually get reelected before actually a movement against him will take place. So sorry, but one of the things that I also have been asking my friends who live in the United States is that, has the lifestyle that you have changed so much from the previous president to this one so that you will complain? And they say, well, you know, not really. So I believe that is not helping to mobilize at least the general opinion to help this movement. So to be honest, I will be glad if that happened. But also, continuing being honest, I don't think it will go anywhere.
You know, it's interesting. It makes me feel like the issues of privacy in tech, a lot of us and listeners are tech-minded, so that will ring true. you understand the theoretical issue and the theoretical risks and the ethical problems that these things pose, but it doesn't really affect you, so you don't care all that much. And I think Trump is a little bit like that, although, you know, if he manages to get something that he can use against Biden, if that's the most likely opponent and more, yeah, that will have an effect. But it's not a direct effect. Again, it's like the climate change. If it brings a sandstorm in front of your house, then you're going to care, but that, it has to be a pretty direct result. So I don't know. All right. Well, to conclude the show, Dan, what's been happening in Mexico?
Well, after listening to these dissident messages from the left, I want to bring some togetherness with a couple of news that are actually about bringing people together. And during the week, I'm going to reduce the first paragraph of one report from Newsweek. And it says, Arizona Republican businessman and pro-Trump United States Senate primary challenger Daniel McCarthy proposed annexing Mexico, telling a radio host that 30 million illegal immigrants and half the country already want to be U.S. citizens. So Daniel McCarthy wants Mexico to be part of the United States. I believe that if he actually say that in radio in Mexico, believe me that he will have a lot of support. We're thinking perhaps in declaring war to the United States, then we intentionally will lose it, and then they can annex the rest of the country. I mean, they have done it before, so sounds like a clear plan. So that's the proposal. So that's not new, but for me it was really funny to hear this. So that happened during the week in Arizona. But here in Mexico, we have been having the evolution of the immigration situation, the immigration problem, in interesting ways. Let me explain. If you recall the last time that I had the chance to be sharing mics with you guys, I mentioned one of the phrases that we're not going to build a wall because the wall, it's a symbol that that Donald Trump wants to build, and actually it doesn't serve any purpose but his ego or to establish a symbol. However, for me, it's kind of sad to mention that right now, yes, we're not building a wall, but we, Mexico, are the wall. And this has to be with the deals that have been taking place with the presidents, with the current president that we have in here, with the representatives of the United States. And let me explain like the different implications that this has. We were dealing with the North, with the previously known as the NAFTA, North America Free Treaty, with Canada and the United States. We have to renew these deals, and it implies in the industry a lot of aspects. For example, most of the cars that you are driving in the United States have at least some of the parts made in Mexico or assembled in Mexico. So the auto industry worked a lot with this because it was cheaper perhaps to build the lower part of the car here in Mexico, then you ship it to the United States, then it came back, and then at the end, you ended with a cheaper product. But however, Trump has been insisting a lot in tariffs. You know that with China, that's a regular problem that you can pretty much listen every day about the tariffs that he wanted to impose to that country. And with Mexico, it was supposed to be different because we were agreeing on a treaty. So we weren't going to have tariffs in aluminium, for example. But then he said that we are going to have it. And then he was like, well, you know how is Trump. It depends what's the mood that he is on that day. And after that, we agreed in a lot of things, we as a country. So we had the treaty signed, the treaty between the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And a couple of days after this treaty that mentioned, for example, that we were not going to have extra tariffs on aluminium, he said that he was going to impose those tariffs if we didn't help more with the immigration problem. So that's the kind of president that we were dealing with. Part of the problem is that in this side, we don't have a lot of power of negotiation, in part because the representatives, the president, the secretary of state here in Mexico, they want pretty much to play it smoothly. So they don't want to discuss a lot, afraid that you can have a stronger opposition in the other side. So you kind of understand that, but the previous president weren't as easygoing in that way. So then you have a signed treaty, something that is recognized by the Congress, at least in Mexico, recognized by the president in here, recognized by the president in the United States. It still needed the approval in the Congress in the United States. But then you have the Trump declaration. So then you see that he has no word, and he will just move and start kicking whoever needed for him to get more popular. However, part of the things that in Mexico we agreed to play part in this was that we were going to get the stronger forces at the southern border, the one that we are sharing with Guatemala and Belize. And part of that was that we were going to send 2,400 soldiers there so that we weren't going to have a lot of people coming from the southern countries, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, El Salvador, for example, that they were trying to use cross Mexico and go to the United States. Okay, so we're going to reinforce the borders in there. Also, one of the other petitions that we have is that Mexico had to become a third secure country. I don't know if that's how you call it in English, or tercer país seguro in Spanish, which means that if you are coming from one of these countries, from Guatemala, for example, and you want to go to the United States, you have to ask for a refugee status but remain in Mexico while your situation is being dealt with. So that can take pretty much about 1 year or 2 years, but we're going to be hosting you in our country. That actually sounds good. However, the main problem is that we had a lot of caravans, a lot of people marching, particularly from Honduras in the last months. And they were going, crossing the country all the way to the north. And then I started seeing something that I haven't seen before in Mexico. Perhaps it was because of the quantity of people crossing. And I found a lot of the things that we complain about the racist people in the United States. That same characteristics were being shown here in Mexico. And we were complaining like, oh, look at those greasy, and insert the name of the country that you were talking against. And look how they are coming. They are just leaving a trail of trash in here. They just want to take our jobs. We are not even able to provide to our own people with food, and they are taking of food. And pretty much the same complaints. So for me, it was really sad, but well, that also shows me that we are not that different.
You know, it's funny. It feels like no matter your level of your economic status as a country, you're never able to provide for immigrants. And
exactly.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if we can't, maybe we. I mean, you know, France, Finland, the U.S., then nobody can. But that's a different conversation. But it's. It's funny that it doesn't matter how much you have, you're never willing to share it. And I say that as someone who's not naturally, you know, wanting to share. My stuff is my stuff, right? That's the human feeling. But I don't. Yeah, it's interesting.
And in the other side of the table, you can see how the different kind of people react to this kind of situation. For example, at the north of the country, we have Tijuana, where you have a lot of maquiladoras, factories where a lot of products are being produced and they are being shipped to the United States. And for example, when there was a disaster in Haiti, we got a lot of immigrants from that island here in Mexico, and they were trying to cross to the United States. And they located in this place waiting for the status, the refugee status. And you could see the difference between the different kind of migrants. And it was funny because you could look at the street and perhaps you are at the stop sign. And then you saw some guy from Haiti with actually a full permit that he could be working here in Mexico. And he was selling you bubble gum at the corner in the red stop in the red light. And when you compare that with the other people who, to be honest, they only want to cross because they want to go to the United States, and you complain that they are just leaving a trail of trash, well, you see different perspective from the different kind of immigrants that we have. And speaking with some of these people from Haiti specifically, they mentioned, well, you know, I know that I'm going to stay here for a longer time. So why I don't treat this place like the place that I'm going to be staying? So I should be looking for a decent work and at least providing to my family with the least that we need while we're waiting. So there you have a positive aspect in this, because you are not only perhaps looking for help, but you actually are trying to make the best of the work situation.
Mm. Yeah, so essentially... No, you were saying you were going to unite us, but that was just the annexing of Mexico. The actual stories are not that positive either. You know, I feel like what you're telling me about the anti-immigrant feelings in Mexico isn't making me feel like you are, you know, oh, these people, they're everywhere and they're terrible. It makes me feel that sentiment is so universal that there is a genuine basis behind it somewhere. And instead of telling those people, you're terrible because you hate the world and you're a horrible human being, my feeling is we have to get to the bottom of why that sentiment is there and fix that, because the hatred for most people, I'm sure there are some people who are, you know, just racist and that's it, but the hatred or the dislike of immigrants and other people is the symptom. It doesn't seem to me like it's the cause. But yeah.
Can I throw out an answer for you real quick?
Oh, please, yes.
At least what I think. I think
fix everything.
Yeah, I'll fix it. Here we go. It's not the most hopeful answer, but it is.
Wendy.
I think it's pretty accurate, which is biology, right? So we have two fundamental things that humans need and do and are, and that is pretty tribal. Like, you're familiar, your language, you sound like me, you look like me. That means safety. We're very biologically driven to feel safe. And that is one component of that, right? Of racism or anyone new coming into your space. And then the second one being scarcity. We have, I mean, you think about our ancestors, right? It's like, I'm going to die if I don't find food. That was every day. And so that is built into our DNA. And so even though we may have plenty, there is something about a stranger joining or walking into our tribe and eating our food. And we didn't invite them there, or we're not sure they're safe. So I think there's these really fundamental biological processes happening, and no one is immune. In fact, I think, you know, this is my argument for religion, is that it actually argues for folks to try to rise above that biology and be nice anyway, right? Mm. And that's the attempt anyway. So my experience in Sweden with this was pretty unique in the timing of it. So I was there during the big wave of Syrian refugees, and Sweden took in 160,000 refugees in one summer. So that's the equivalent of 10 million in the United States coming in one summer based on population difference. That's a shocking amount. And were people frustrated? Yes. And were they worried? Yes. And was it difficult? Yes. However, they did something that I thought was incredibly ingenious, is every single city was required to take a certain number of folks. And so what would happen is you would enter Sweden, they would get you to a location. And sometimes those were pretty rough places, like really far up north in the dark. but this distribution thing meant that each community, their resources weren't stretched so thin because they already had some program in place. I benefited from that program. I went to the English or the Swedish classes, and that's how I got to know so many refugees, is because they were in school, learning the language, learning how to integrate. Now, is it perfect? No. But did it collapse that country? No. Did it maybe rise a little bit of the white nationalists there? Maybe, yes. But there is something to be said for, there's different techniques to use to limit this amount of scarcity feeling or this human tribalism thing. And here's the crazy part. Okay. And this is why Americans are hypocrites. Is we are every single one of us an immigrant. Every one of us, unless you are a Native American. And what happened is each group at each time was the outcast. We've done this over and over and over. But then the next group comes, and then now we can hate them. But we then integrate and we become, you know, the society. And part of that is just time and human.
Okay, but
I didn't solve it just now.
Well, I mean,
come on, Patrick, be positive.
So there are some people, and it's not about income, it's not about how much you have, because you have people on both sides of the issue in every social class, right? So what makes it different for different people? What makes it that some people feel that way and some people don't, even though they might have a lot or a little?
That's a great point, because it's relative. So we know some stuff about when people can feel good about the amount they have, like they feel like it's good. So you take somebody and you say, all right, You're going to make $75,000 a year. That's pretty good. You're going to make $75,000 a year, but you're going to live in a neighborhood where everyone's making $80,000, $85,000. Or you're going to make $60,000 a year, and everyone around you is going to make $50,000. Which would you choose? And again and again, people pick $60,000. It's not the amount. It's the comparison. Mm-hmm. It's the feeling poor, feeling scarcity. And I think that's the very ancient thing that gets triggered of, I don't have enough. And then if the perception is someone else is coming in and getting a free ride, that is really difficult when we ourselves are struggling. And I think—
Okay.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think that's part of the rise of Donald Trump and the popularity that he has. I mean, that dude has never been poor, has no idea what real people's lives are like. It's not that he gets it. It's that on one hand, he is kind of odd man out. I mean, there's some interesting stories about him. One in Las Vegas is a particular one I know about from someone I know, is that he wanted to build his hotel on the strip, like all of the other hotels. They just crowded him out. So he is a good, I don't know, it's like two or three blocks away from the strip. Because a group of businessmen at the time didn't like him and didn't want him there, and they wouldn't let him do it. And so I think he has been in the rich world, this kind of odd duck, and has always been fighting to be good enough. And you can see it. That's how he operates. And so you take that, like he can reach that part of people who are maybe white, working class folks who are like, no one's ever represented me before. No one ever has talked to me before or cared about me before. And so he's tapping into that populist thing. And I think this is happening all over the world. You have strong men that come in and go, yeah, I see you down there, when they're living lavish lifestyles. It doesn't even make sense in theory. But what it does is it points to this thing of like, I got you and I'm going to help you when no one else seems to have cared about you or forgotten you. Yeah. While others can come in and bootstrap it and suddenly they're making money and everyone's taking my, you know, the money, my taxes, et cetera. So it starts to really tap into the, A, I'm forgotten, my tribe doesn't care about me, and then someone new can come in and take over. So it's mm-hmm. messy. It's really messy.
All right.
One comment that I want to say, but sorry, Patrick.
No, go ahead, Dan. I'll okay, finish up afterwards with a solution right, to everything.
Yes, please. We need that. For example, I do agree completely with what Wendy was mentioning. And we have a fake sense of entitlement because we think that we deserve even that we don't know that we could have. And at least there have been some steps being taken to fight this. At least in Mexico, for example, our current president mentioned during this week that he was going to give the support to Guatemala specifically. Economical support, like $30 million, to help so the people shouldn't be looking for work in here. And perhaps in here in Mexico, a lot of people were saying, as I mentioned before, why are you giving our money to somebody else? Why are you giving away something that we actually need in here? Well, first of all, perhaps you didn't even know that we have this money and it was for different kinds of projects. So that was actually a really positive thing. And we have to be sharing the things that we have. In Mexico, we have a saying that in Spanish is donde come uno, comen dos, or where one person can eat, surely two people could eat there in there. And it means that we are willing to share at least a bit to somebody else who is in need. So we have to start thinking that not about what we think that we deserve, but actually what we think that we can give. And those are small pieces. That's something that requires perhaps a cultural change. But let's be honest, there are just some small groups of people who actually are unable to give away something that somebody needs more. And that was all.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's, I think, understandable for everyone that there are some people who actually don't have enough to give stuff away. It's interesting, the relative aspects of what you were talking about, Wendy, how we relate to other people in our social group, if they have more or less. In France, I come across people who are fighting to reduce the inequalities, you know, the left side of the equation, which I think has a point. There is definitely always things to be adjusted and to be changed to make sure that everyone is paying their fair share. But I always think a lot of people see themselves as everyone sees themselves as the people who have a little bit less than the others. And it depends on who the others you're comparing yourself to are. But in France, I think the people who are fighting these fights the most, I don't think they're actually, you know, the most disenfranchised. You're always someone else's rich person, no matter where you are, you know, unless you're one of the people Dan was talking about who are actually impoverished. And I think that's an interesting way of thinking about it. It doesn't necessarily change your views on the world or on society. I'm not saying the people on the left that they should not fight capitalism. I think it's just an interesting way of looking at things that is not always exercised. But to fix everything before we close off the show, I wanted to say, if the problem is often perception, as well, perception of who is making more than you in the world and around us, we have technology. I think a perfect solution to that issue is that when you look online, at least, you should be, whatever you see should be filtered to only display things from people who are worse off than yourself. And then you would never feel, oh, you know, I'm getting screwed, I don't have enough, and I'm just I see those people who have more than me, and so it's unfair, everything is unfair, and thus immigrants are taking from me, and that's terrible. But it could be filtered individually, so everyone would only see stuff from people who have less, and that would fix it, right?
It's literally the opposite of Instagram.
Yes, exactly. It would be Notstagram.
I have nothing-a-gram. Yeah. No, that would be a really fun experiment to see what would happen.
Although Instagram is people making it seem like everything's perfect. So I don't know. You know, I post a lot of pictures from my morning walks and stuff like that. It makes you think that everything is wonderful. What you don't see is when it's raining all day and it's dark, and actually even the rain is wonderful here in the forest. So I don't know.
That is true. Your nice. Stuff is real.
All right. And that's going to be it for our show today. Before we leave, can both of you tell us where we can find your stuff online? Let's start with Dan. Sir, go ahead.
It's really easy. You can just follow me on Twitter as Dan Campos, and I talk mainly about cinema, about science, and about storytelling. So there you have it, at Twitter as Dan Campos.
Wendy, are you still on Instagram?
I am. I'm still on Instagram, and you will not feel bad about your life if you follow me, because I only post ridiculous things and embarrassing things. So Wendy Dunford on Instagram, and then therapythursdays.com if you have a therapy question you want to ask. I have all the answers, apparently.
You know, I would love for it to be a therapy online service. That has to exist, where you can call up a therapist and...
It does. Okay. There's a couple great websites, actually. So I was a little skeptical at first, and I had a client who decided to try it out and then let me see the transcripts. But there's a couple ones. One, the one I'm familiar with is BetterHelp, BETTER, help.com. And they assign you a therapist, and it is all text and email, and it's all day, all night, whatever you need. And he sent me the transcript, so I got a chance to sort of see how the person responded. I'd already seen this person. I knew everything about them. And this person nailed it really quickly. It was really impressive. Yeah, I thought, no way. But
what if I don't want to write, though? What if I want to talk to someone and lie on my, you know, couch and...
Yeah, I actually do that.
Really?
Yeah, it's a thing. That's the future of my industry, I think, in a lot of ways, because you can see people in lots of places, but also, you know, it is environmentally sound to sit in your house, not get in your car and come visit. And you can wear your pajamas. It's great. So there's options. Especially
but there
for
isn't
people.
A site that will connect you with someone you can talk to.
You know, you can Google a little bit and find various people who do that. So a lot of expats, that's a real big thing. If you're in a country that it's not your native language, that's pretty tricky to really get in your deep feelings when you can't get all the words right. And so that exists more for those kinds of things. So Google around. And if anyone really wants to know, I can help you navigate that a little bit. You can just DM me.
Okay, excellent. I feel like, you know, we should talk because I did have a therapist for a little while, and I think it's super healthy. It's a lot of people, well, maybe not these days. Most people understand that this is something that can be helpful. But it's really like understanding yourself is your mind is as important as understanding your body. And I think that's healthy even for people who are mostly healthy. And totally. So maybe there's something that should be done, but I don't know ethical or weird it would be if I told you all my problems and then you would be on the show.
And then I come on the show and try not to
of course, Patrick, you would think that. Like,
of course you're greedy, Patrick. Yeah. We've discussed the source of that.
That reminds me of your pet from when you were a teenager so much. I'm like, oh, what? All right. Well, let's talk. For me, not Patrick, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as well, if you want the wonderful pictures of rain in the Finnish forest. And the site for this show, frenchspin.com, where you can comment on what we said, interesting or not. And, if you thought it was interesting or if you thought it was crap, I guess, say that you can come say that as well. And if you enjoy the show and want to support it, patreon.com/thePhileas Club. The link is in the show notes as well. So please use it liberally and extensively and enjoy that as well. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in about... we're trying to put together a saga about Brexit as it looms closer and closer, but at the same time, ever farther. So we'll see if that happens, but I think it might. We have a number of people I'd love to talk to. So hopefully in a few weeks we'll have that. Talk to you then. Bye.